I'm Veronica Zudo, tonight on EWTN News Nightly.
After the Supreme Court shoots down President Trump's tariffs, the president promptly holds a news conference. I'm Owen Jensen. I'll have that story coming up.
1 week later, and Congress can't figure out how to end the Department of Homeland Security shutdown. What effects we're already starting to see. Plus, preparing for the Pope.
For me, it's incredible to see him. That he is coming here. It's wonderful.
The Holy Father is once again leaving the Vatican to be with his flock, where he's going this weekend. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast day of St. Leo of Catania. Our top story tonight, it was the high court decision President Donald Trump was not hoping for and instead warning about. In a 6-3 ruling, the Supreme Court has struck down President Trump's far-reaching global tariffs. And tonight, he's dealing with a major legal defeat. President Trump responded saying four foreign countries that have been ripping us off for years are ecstatic, dancing in the streets. But they won't be dancing for long. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Veronica, good evening to you. President Donald Trump praised the justices on the court who sided with him in this ruling, but blasted those who did not, saying the Democrats on the court are thrilled. And he also announced he's imposing a new temporary 10% global tariff.
The Supreme Court's ruling on tariffs is deeply disappointing.
And President Donald Trump tells a jam-packed briefing room in a previously unscheduled news conference.
And I'm ashamed of certain members of the court, absolutely ashamed, for not having the courage to do what's right for our country.
The decision centers on the tariffs President Trump unilaterally imposed under an emergency powers law, including the sweeping reciprocal tariffs levied on nearly every other country. The majority found that the Constitution very clearly gives Congress the power to impose taxes, which include tariffs. Still, the president is not backing down, including this announcement.
Effective immediately, all national security tariffs under Section 232 and existing Section 301 tariffs, they're existing, they're there, remain in place, fully in place, and in full force and effect.
I asked the president about an earlier Truth Social post he made.
Mr. President, sir, you warned once in a social media post that if the Supreme Court did this, shot down your tariffs, the U.S. would be, quote, financially defenseless. Are we financially defenseless right now?
No, because we're doing something in a different way. We're doing something in a very powerful way, and we're using things that some people thought we should have used in the first place. But it's more complicated. It's a little more complicated. The process takes a little more time. But the end result is going to get us more money. And I think it's going to be great.
But Senator Schumer posts a victory for the wallets of every American consumer. Trump's illegal tariff tax just collapsed. He tried to govern by decree and stuck families with the bill. Enough chaos. End the trade war.
Now, the tariff ruling comes on the same day as the Commerce Department announced that U.S. economic growth slowed in the final months of 2025, that long government shutdown last fall, in part to blame. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
For more, I'd like to bring on Zachary Shimtob, editor at SCOTUS Blog, and John Hartley, economist and policy fellow at the Hoover Institution. Zachary, I'd like to start with you. SCOTUS ruled against the use of tariffs under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, known as IEEPA. But there are many different applications that tariffs can be enacted under. Following the decision, President Trump said he will sign an order to impose a 10% global tariff under Section 122. Over and above the normal tariffs already being charged. So the justices ultimately confirmed that a president can set global tariffs, just not under IEEPA. But where does Congress fit in, or doesn't it?
So I would just to back up a little. They didn't really opine ultimately on whether it could be done through other tariffs. They don't want to speak to that question necessarily at this point, although it was raised more forcefully in the dissent. But as for the separation of powers, that was really at the heart of this decision. And the idea was, at least when it came to IEEPA, this provision that the president used. Ultimately, the president did not have the authority, according to the majority, to enact tariffs pursuant to that statute.
Now, John, looking at the global economy, for months, countries and companies alike have reshaped the way they do business because of the tariffs. When it comes to tariff refunds for companies that pay tens of billions of dollars, the Supreme Court left this completely unresolved. Are you surprised over their silence?
I am. And it's, I think, the most unfortunate part of the ruling, in the sense that it would almost be better if there was more clarity on refunds, how they would be done in some manner, versus now deferring to the lower courts means that it's going to take a long time. It's going to be very complicated for that process to play out. And so I think it's unfortunate that that the court has sort of left this part unanswered. Obviously, the president has expressed that he's going to attempt to put into place tariffs using some of these other legal justifications. Section 232, Section 301, whereas the court today was just ruling on IEEPA and the legal case that you can use IEEPA to pass sweeping tariffs. Now that the fact that we don't exactly know what's going to happen with the refunds, one, it creates a lot of uncertainty rather than delivering sort of a clear sort of what's next when it comes to the fiscal implications of the ruling today. So I think that is is particularly unfortunate. It would have been, I think, better for all parties involved, whether you're in favor of tariffs or not, if this was actually resolved in the case. And I think it's a bit unfortunate.
It's really a quick moving day. Zachary, U.S. Customs and Border Protection so far has collected an estimated $170 billion in tariffs imposed by President Trump using IEEPA. After today's Supreme Court ruling, will the lower courts be left to sort out whether importers are entitled to refunds? And if so, how long could that take?
The answer is yes. And in terms of what's gotten passed off, what's not, that's going to be a huge issue. This is going to be a series of litigations and challenges in the lower courts. They're going to potentially be dealing with this for years. Of course, then there's the additional complication. If the tariffs or tariffs are passed through these other provisions and these other laws, that is also likely to generate litigation. So not only could we be dealing with the refunds going through the lower courts, but the lower courts will also be dealing with whether these other tariffs provisions have been properly enacted by the president, as in they contain all sorts of other limits and scopes. So you're going to have litigation all the way through. This is certainly not the end of the tariff dispute.
And we heard from the president and his team. They are certainly ready to move forward. John, President Trump also announced he will sign an executive order to set a 10% global tariff. We started our conversation with that. What's been the global reaction to everything that has happened today?
Sure. So one thing that's particularly interesting is that in response to the Supreme Court ruling that happened this morning on IEEPA, that actually the dollar sold off in response to it, which is historically how people would expect the dollar to respond to a tariff reprieve. What was surprising was when Liberation Day, the Liberation Day tariffs were originally announced back in April, the dollar actually depreciated then, which is sort of contrary to what people would typically expect. I think there's some reasons for why that happened at the time, perhaps due to portfolio outflows. But what's interesting is that the dollar depreciated some level today. And what's interesting is to some degree that helps exporters, a lower dollar and slows down imports. So I think that's interesting. Certainly he's responded now. The president's responded saying that he's going to enact Section 122 tariffs under the Trade Act of 1974. What's interesting about Section 122 is that that only lasts for up to 150 mm-hmm. days. At the same time, the president can use these other avenues, Section 232, 301, to reclassify some of the IEEPA tariffs. Those tariffs are actually going to take more time in the sense that they require extensive reviews. by various agencies, the USTR, US Trade Representative Office, Commerce Department, and elsewhere. So at some level, I think that Section 122 gives something of a buffer. What's interesting, too, is the president today was saying that he wanted certainty, and maybe just, I guess, 10% certainty around tariffs, I think, is part of what he's trying to achieve with this pivot in response to the Supreme Court ruling.
Zachary Shimtob and John Hartley, thank you both for being on our panel tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
It's been almost a week since the Department of Homeland Security shut down, and it's anyone's guess when it will reopen. Talks are at a standstill as Democrats remain dug in on their demands to reform ICE, while Republicans blame Democrats for leaving over a half a million federal workers in other agencies under the DHS umbrella out to dry. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now. Eric, it seems like the two sides just can't agree on anything.
No, they certainly can't, Veronica. Good evening to you. If anything, the two sides are further apart than they were last Friday when the shutdown began. It was now Democrats are growing increasingly uneasy about adding new funds for immigration enforcement agencies as the DHS shutdown stretches into its second week. Democrats believe so far they have the upper hand.
ICE needs to be reformed in a dramatic, bold, meaningful, and transformational manner. And if that doesn't happen, the DHS funding bill will not move forward.
We need to just solve the issue, which is ICE needs to stop terrorizing Americans. You know, they need to stop doing what they're doing, and this administration has not had any indication, inclination to want to reform that. And until they do, we're not going to fund it.
Republicans accuse Democrats of holding federal employees hostage.
We have 670,000 people being furloughed. It's not fair to TSA, FEMA, Coast Guard, all these folks who are serving our country to be furloughed, and our country needs them. And so my view of it, we play hardball because the Democrats have initiated this.
And the effects of the shutdown are starting. DHS told more than 300 FEMA responders preparing for assignment to stand down, and all travel stopped. And that's not all. Over 60,000 TSA employees deemed essential are currently working without pay and will miss their first paycheck at the end of the month. Senator Rick Scott said in a statement that lawmakers should not be paid during the shutdown. Quote, thanks to the Democrats' shutdown, TSA, FEMA, and DHS employees are all going to work without pay. It's time to pass my No Budget, No Pay Act. If federal workers don't get paid because Congress fails to pass a budget, then members shouldn't get paid either.
If the Republicans think that just because they have money for ICE and that it's okay not to pay TSA, not to pay Secret Service, not to pay the Coast Guard, then they're in for a difficult road.
We're watching two agencies very closely. That's the U.S. Coast Guard and the U.S. Secret Service. Now, most of their employees are considered essential, so they're basically working without pay right now. And they, too, won't get paychecks unless DHS moves some money around. They did that during the last fall's 43-day shutdown. But bottom line, the shutdown drags on, and there doesn't seem to be much urgency among lawmakers to reach a deal. Many of them are still in their districts. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly. Surprise meeting. A week after their Catholic school was vandalized, students got to meet the Holy Father. We talked to the trip leader about what Pope Leo had to say. And the hits keep coming for the former Prince Andrew, what his recent arrest means for him and the British monarchy. Back, the fallout following the arrest and release of former Prince Andrew keeps getting worse. Today, police searched the former home of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor a day after he was arrested and held on suspicion of misconduct in public office. The investigation stems from his friendship with the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Now the BBC is reporting that the British government is considering introducing legislation to remove Andrew from the royal line of succession. For more on this, I want to bring in Jennifer Paxton. She is an associate professor of history at the Catholic University of America. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
When was the last time a member of the royal family was arrested?
It was in 1647, and that's when Charles I was arrested by Parliament on charges of treason, and that led, of course, 2 years later to his execution. But this is a very different scenario than what we're seeing now with the former Prince Andrew, because that was essentially a political crime. It was a political dispute between the Parliament and the King. Andrew was being accused of a crime that anyone could have committed, so it's a very different scenario.
How likely is it that the UK Parliament will vote to remove Andrew from the royal line of succession?
I think that's very possible. Parliament has the right to do that. They have changed the succession numerous times. The most recent was when Prince William married Middleton, yes. Well, because what they were worrying about was that she might give birth to a girl first. And in the old line of succession, the girl would have been bumped by a subsequent boy. So they can do this. They can remove him if they want to. Parliament has the power.
Now, there have been scandals surrounding the British royals for hundreds of years. Do you think this could be the beginning of the end of the monarchy?
I think it's much too soon to say that. But what I will say is, as I just mentioned, Parliament could change the monarchy if it wanted to. One thing that I could see happening is a reduction in taxpayer support for the monarchy. That would be sort of low-hanging fruit and a way to really signal the displeasure of the public.
Do you see any trends with citizens moving away from support of the royal family recently?
Yes. There has been a sharp reduction in support for the monarchy in the last few decades. I certainly think that the death of Queen Elizabeth was a watershed. She was far more popular, alas, than her son.
Jennifer Paxson, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Next Stop, see where Pope Leo is making his second pastoral visit of the Lenten season. Plus, after being the target of vandalism, one school group gets some special attention. Touches are being made at the Sacred Heart of Jesus Basilica for the Lenten visit of Pope Leo XIV this Sunday. EWTN News Vatican correspondent Valentina Di Donato has more.
I volunteer here for God, for the people who come here who need help.
Just steps from the hustle and bustle of the Termini train station, where thousands pass through each day, stands a church rooted in stillness and service. The Basilica of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. In this neighborhood of Castro Pretorio, faith meets the margins. Joshua Fabrizio Lara Mauricio is one of the missionary volunteers who serves here daily, offering food, clothing, and something harder to measure, dignity. Migrants arriving with suitcases, the homeless seeking shelter, travelers with nowhere else to go. And this Lent, this parish becomes a focal point for the Universal Church. It is the second of five Roman parishes Pope Leo XIV will visit during the Lenten season, bringing the Holy Father directly into one of the city's most transient communities. And for Joshua, the visit feels deeply personal.
For me, it's incredible to see him, that he is coming here. It's wonderful to feel even a little of his blessing and to know that through my work, I'm helping him as a missionary of God.
Inside the parish, preparations are underway. But Father Javier Ortiz says the real movement is already happening in the hearts.
This visit has awakened us to go out and search, to truly live the spirituality of the Sacred Heart of the Good Shepherd, to seek those who feel distant, who cannot or do not come close. We go to find them.
Noi andiamo a cercarlo.
For this community, the Pope's presence is not about ceremony. It is about encounter. Alejandro understands that well. A missionary volunteer who chooses to live on the streets he serves. He says the Holy Father's visit during Lent is a reminder of the merciful gaze of God.
I am emotional because he is the head of the church, like Peter, successor of Peter.
Como Pedro.
In a parish beside the railway tracks, where lives intersect for only moments, something lasting is taking place. This Lent, the Pope's journey shines a light on a community that has long been quietly living the gospel, seeking the lost, welcoming the stranger, and serving Christ in the least expected places. In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
Students at a Catholic school in California targeted by a major act of vandalism earlier this month just had a very special meeting in Rome. They were able to meet Pope Leo in an unexpected meeting last week. He gave them his blessing and prayers. On February 2nd, the school's principal discovered that a statue of Mary was smashed and the tabernacle removed and thrown to the floor. Joining us now to talk more about the meeting is Kiernan Fiore, who led the trip. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, what was it like to meet the Pope and how did the students respond?
I think the Holy Father is an amazing person. He has amazing generosity. You know, when you're at the papal audience, you can feel the power of his prayer. And I think for me, as the leader of the group, I felt so keen for the Holy Father to know what had happened at our school. I felt so confident of his prayers, of the power of his prayers for our community. I think it was particularly special for the students because this group of seniors had been the only ones we had taken in to see our school hall and chapel after it was vandalized. They helped us clean up. They helped us replace the tabernacle. It was just particularly moving for me to see some of our senior girls. We only have 9 in this class, and they were the ones who helped clean up the statue of the Blessed Mother. And less than a week later, they were being personally blessed by the Holy Father.
So you told the Holy Father, what was his reaction, and also what were the students saying during all of this?
Most of the students were too struck dumb to say anything at all. And afterwards, they, of course, thought of all the things they wanted to say. But I was keen to let the Holy Father know what had happened at our school. And his simple reaction was just to say over and over, the tabernacle, the tabernacle. Mm-hmm. And for the students, this has been just a source of comfort each day to know that the Holy Father is praying for them.
Do you have any updates on who was behind this act of vandalism?
No, we don't know anything more. We're working just with cooperating with law enforcement. Yes.
And how are repairs going?
Amazing. Our community is just truly blessed. I mean, our community turned out to help clean up and repair things in the hall. We had local carpenters help do immediate repairs. But then through the generosity of the broader community, we are going to be able to fully restore everything that was destroyed. The most powerful thing for us is that we do have the funds and someone to restore our Blessed Mother statue, which has been with the school since 1958 and with the parish longer.
Wonderful news. Kiernan Fiore, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, YouTube, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Veronica Dudo. Good night and God bless.